Good morning. My name is Michael McCusker. Before I start, just to remind everybody, Sunday is Martin Luther King Jr.'s real birthday. Today's program is divided into two parts. The first is a poem, and part two, a couple of letters, one that I wrote to the Daily Astorian, which may or may not print it, and my response to the second letter, which is a criticism of my Christmas program addressed to KMUN. The poem is by John Michael McCauley, who committed suicide in November. His body was found in the mud underneath the old Young's Bay Bridge. He was a good friend. I had known him nearly 40 years, both in Portland and for several years in Astoria. He was 78 when he decided to leave the planet and had been evicted from where he lived. He planned his suicide, and friends were unable to coax him out of it. His life was varied. He was a student at Reed College in Portland, and also got a degree in mathematics from University of Oregon, and another in economics from Portland State University. He worked for state and public agencies as an economist, and was also a bartender, waiter, and maitre d' at the great and justly famous Vat and Tonsure restaurant in Portland, owned and operated by our mutual friends, Mike and Rosemarie Barbeau Quinn. She sang opera in Europe. In Astoria, he was a dish dog at the Ship Inn, and he wrote poetry. I published many of his poems in my newspaper, the North Coast Times-Eagle, some of which he illustrated. The poem I am about to read appeared in the July 1991 issue of the Times-Eagle. He wrote it for a woman he loved, and rather than merely dedicate it to her, he made her nom de femme its title. So that the poem will not seem obscure, it is about blood and its circulation through the human body, which it might be easier to ascertain if you were to read it rather than listen to my usual discordance. For V-Lot by John Michael McCauley. 1. Blood clock. During passage, route, and location, assume an acute reality, frozen and filled at destination, transit, stasis, de facto duality, motion time integrates externality, stop time isolates personality, impetus for synthesis, sufficient to invent idealized measurement that will release time from timepiece. Here is the way. Detached from disappointment and shame, women who do not play at some inconsequential game, consider their looms. They are workers in the message mill, making syllogisms that say, all stop, ways stop, eternal, stop, all stop, ways already traveled, stop. 7:30 a.m., metro, that others will catch. 9 p.m., TV show that others will watch. February 2nd, birthday card to send. Rosa Parks goes to jail. Luther and Nietzsche nail manifestos on doors, conjuncted endeavors, merging individuality with society and history, populated points on a line called real. Available cells congeal, appropriate electrochemical currents to record events, underpinned by the presumption that a similar process has occurred for everyone out there. Timeshare, consciousness, abstraction to redress, absolute loneliness of being in the skin. Feeding all this preoccupation and activity within, enter auricle to ventricle, embarkation on all stop, ways already traveled, stop, the vital passage imperceptible, except as an afterthought. Finger pressed to the wrist, finger pressed to the neck. The persistent pulsing caught beneath the pressure overwhelms the rationalist with that flash of terrific respect for intimacy, living in the body, out of cerebral reach, no bridge for the breach. The blood passes through its vessels. Movement ticks off intervals, occupied by billions of cells, each with its own appointment to keep, in its own time, independent of the sweep of some second-hand circling some clock on some wall, trembling intricate layering of paths and shunts and velocities and cell death and cell renewal, wound out in the cycle of provision and renewal, governed by a protean distribution of urgencies at each protoplasm destination, assigned through veins and arteries until all stop, ways stop, eternal, real time in the blood stop, returns to myth in a final ritual. Always equals eternal. 2. Plasma physics. A deft intrusion punctures the vein. Watch that rich pollution of used blood drain down the sides of the vinyl bag, carried away full for centrifuging, to spin it off until there's just a slag of boggy red cells, while the saline solution drips into the depleted vessels. Cruel violation of a vital process. But what's 1 point more or less when $10 is a substantial sum to an unemployed lush, plus a bonus, the cold bracing rush guaranteed to come while the half bag of an inert slush re-enters the circulation, accepts its heady invitation. All aboard Einstein's two-way trolley lines, welcome back into the flow where E equals MC squared. The tracks have been cleared, and now it's time to go. Entropy can be put aside. This is a luxury ride with fuel to spare. The sun will pay the fare, so no external limit is implied, just the internal wear and tear bound to occur on a journey through the geography of synergy. Diffused in the fluid plasma, the red cells are accelerated on their way to wipe out the miasma of spent vitality they have accumulated to become arterial blood and release a fresh flood of materials to use for the work done by tissues. This stuff is volatile, the path of particle. Activity may be very undependable. A desired reaction can't always be inferred. The authority here would be Heisenberg, because there is too much variability of motion to be adequately enveloped by a density function. Even Einstein left room for explosion. Misfire, miscue, the whole menu of accident despite intent, massive catastrophe when something isn't where or what it's supposed to be. Complex collisions and emissions in the lines produce exotic dishes served during cell streaming, print back and forth messages that radically perplex transmissions, launch magicians into the spine to seduce chaotic wishes and lure lavish, skewed dreaming. Decaying humors fill the cerebrum, practically confounding control with exhilaration, incredible particle excitation, then annihilation. Plague overruns the crown of creation. Panic, migraine, nightmare, depression, guilt, despair, damages from images that memory can't bear, incursions of doubt, total erasure of laughter, just the glacier of morning after, won't amp out, won't amp out. Perversity of design allows too much emptiness for the systems to confine. Particular recklessness, density is a deception. There's clear path in every direction. No limit to energy, no limit to range. No wonder the tendency toward drastic change. It's impulse to free fall in the flow where the natural state is vertigo. 3. The first messenger. Astronomers discovered this hole in M87. Their telescopes overheard a diastole radiation from matter that was falling in. It wouldn't be seen again, ever, not even light. The fit is just too tight. Unavoidable attraction, then the ultimate compaction. Destination, end of the line. Obliteration of space and time. The whole is peculiar. You wouldn't believe that you were there unless you tried to leave. Awareness compressed, simultaneous, dimensionless. Floated and fed in her sumptuous bath, the double is oblivious to its own articulation. All events are strictly sensational. Real involvement felt without inwit, although her blood has left an imprint, as it nourishes development inside fetal marrow, fetal glands. They are woven with preconscious strands, embodying the experience of a coincident existence. Deliverance into independence and flattered by easy power. The process in the tower plays with incoming perceptions, remembers and imagines, rationalizes and dreams, sucks oxygen from streams of red cells bred in the marrow. Imprint infiltrates imago. Captain Control has opened the gate of an irretrievable state, the life in the mother, being with an other. All the rules have changed, intellect marred, estranged, searches for a connection that knows this resurrection. Memory too blurred, completion denied, functional rupture, the great divide. Seen from the hotel window, the activity below, on this thoroughfare, in D.C. or Charleston or Baltimore, the city has been swallowed, was familiar to memory or impressed on some lower level of realization. Queer dizziness followed, suddenly by illumination, a dazzling sense of something recognized, but beyond identification. All the movement on the street had become more massive in the heat, slower, well-defined, but somehow compromised by the medium in which it was occurring. Scattered momentum changes imposed shimmering to thicken tension, bind emotion in a coloring that was as tactile as it was visual, almost aural, almost astral, phantomless awareness, spontaneous, directionless. Won't process, but the experience has richness. Rationalization can't suppress. Blood and endocrine activity, the brain's primitive anatomy. Subcerebral autonomy, limbic suffusion of memory, fertile confusion of imagery, too much infestation, won't process. Clarification drives consciousness. Adubration smears, introduces complication. Non-pluses, concentration. Haughty egocentricity misdirects its integrity, focuses on alienation from the somatic history that precedes its ability to recollect oversensitivity of intellect. Understanding all this vulnerability, preconsciousness exercises its own selectivity, stimulated by information in a conceptual code, guaranteed continuation, and circulated in the blood. The older brain indulges notions, calls up emotions, implodes impressions, fuses expressions of the vocabulary, of the pituitary pumped out from the heart, jumpstart that body blush, flooding cerebrum with plush, profusion of recursion to an undifferentiated immersion, synchronous genesis, awareness processed, fed by the flow, fed in the flow, nowhere else to go. Formula for destiny. All ways are hereditary, all ways found in heredity. The Buddha resting against the tree, humming his hymn to blood's majesty. And notes. 1. Blood clock. This section is about the split between time measured as an external continuity and time measured in the blood. During passage, route, and location, an identity crisis, which is probably pretty primitive. Detached from disappointment and shame, resorts to magic or myth to resolve the identity crisis. 7:30 a.m. metro, external time is invented. Enter auricle fall to ventricle. Blood in veins flows into heart chambers, then to lungs, back to heart chambers, and leaves as arterial blood. 2. Plasma physics. This section is about energy in the blood. There is a double meaning in the title. Plasma physics is a branch of physics concerned with the behavior of particles in superheated gases. A deft intrusion punctures the vein. Description of cell plasma. Entropy can be put aside. energy in the closed system tends to become evenly distributed. This introduces disorder because organization is based on selective, uneven distribution of energy. A person is not a closed system as far as energy is concerned. There is plenty of outside energy to draw from. It all ultimately comes from the sun. Food derives from plant photosynthesis. So does oxygen. It is the residue of photosynthesis. This stuff is volatile. This equates the two meanings of plasma physics by asserting that compounds carried in the blood behave like superheated gases. Pretty gross exercise of poetic license because those compounds are more apt to be stable. But hey, who's counting? The authority here would be Heisenberg. Heisenberg's uncertainty principle is a basic part of quantum physics. Einstein couldn't accept it. Served during cell streaming, a process by which materials in a cell are transferred to another cell, crown of creation, an illusion to consciousness. The phrase is taken from a recording by the Jefferson Airplane. Allows too much emptiness. As far as particle activity is concerned, atoms might as well be regarded as almost entirely empty space. 3, the first messenger. This section is about blood and consciousness. Astronomers discovered this hole in M87. Black hole in galaxy M87. Black holes exert a super strong gravitational pull. The image is used by Sandra McPherson in her poem, Collapsers, from Radiations, by Sandra McPherson, Echo Press, New York, 1973. Had become more massive in the heart. Stable atomic configurations are achieved as free electrons burn off energy to reach orbit paths. The more orbiting electrons, the more massive the atom. To thicken tension, bind motion into coloring. One condition for nuclear force is to be strong enough to hold the nucleus of an atom together is that the colors of the particles in the nucleus are evenly balanced. Limbic suffusion of memory. The limbic system in the brain links the mammary body and the cerebral cortex. It is concerned with instinctive emotions and memory. And that was all by John Michael McCauley for V-Lot. And now a letter that I wrote to the Daily Astorian a week or so ago. And, as I said, it might or might not publish it. I have known William Michael Schuster since we both returned from Vietnam nearly half a century ago. We met in Portland, introduced by one of his sisters. We both had been Marines, and our Vietnam tours overlapped in the same places at the same time. But he was artillery, and I spent most of my time with infantry and recon. So only back stateside did we get to know each other. For virtually all of these years, we have been close friends. I have admired his intelligence, his humorous eccentricities, and his artistry. He paints and draws compulsively. I know he has been convicted of child sexual abuse, which I find very difficult to believe despite the claims against him, though he has not contested the charge. I do know what he did do. He killed people. He handled the big artillery guns in Vietnam. He fired so-called harassment and interdiction missions, which were indiscriminate artillery barrages that destroyed villages, killing men, women, and children nearly every day. No court in the world will convict him for that, except the court of his conscience, which has ever since. Schuster has PTSD. Vietnam has been saturated into his very sense of everything. If anyone wants proof, look at his paintings. Don't expect insanity or emotional breakdowns. Obsession with the war as a lifelong wound that never heals, that is PTSD. I am aware that his mind has deteriorated over time. He sought treatment at the VA, but was made homeless by Astoria's gentrification frenzy. He has been in jail for nearly a year and has been given psychiatric treatment. He faces at least another 4 years incarceration. I take great exception that the prosecution and judge have said that he must have violated other girls. That is unqualified conjecture and besmirches him without any evidence. Such unproven assertions made by public officials disgraces their positions of trust and the most basic tenet of our laws and judicial system, innocent until proven guilty. He has not been accused of any other crimes, no matter the conjectural hearsay. Yet these officials apparently felt it was okay to publicly accuse him of additional criminal behavior without a shred of verifiable evidence. I regard that as criminally offensive. And that's a letter I wrote to the Daily Astorian. And now there's a letter written to KMUN, R.E., Come All Ye Faithful, which was my radio program, December 22nd. I have just listened to Michael McCusker's commentary titled Come All Ye Faithful that began on at 9:30 a.m. December 22nd, 2016. I'm writing to say that what I heard was just appalling. What started out as a commentary on the importance of maintaining the proper balance between church and state in the holiday season quickly became an anti-Christian, anti-religion screed. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. This bizarre monologue includes statements that imply that Christians are such extremist fundamentalists that they support a, quote, military theocracy, unquote, bent on rounding up gays, assertive women, which is also a quote, and non-Christians. He indicates that Christians are against the separation of church and state to such an extent that race wars and ethnic cleansing in America will be the result. About halfway through this half-hour nightmare, the subject matter changes from anti-religion to a political indictment of Donald Trump. McCusker single-handedly presents his own extreme beliefs on KMUN radio. Why all of this is presented under the title of Come All Ye Faithful is never explained, but it is clear to me that he would have little concern over the values or feelings of any listener who asked that question. Was it odd or was it political commentary that McCusker's speech was sandwiched in between a reading of a sweet Christmas story from Little House on the Prairie and the song Santa's Coming to Town? That was strange enough, but it's unclear to me why KMUN would tolerate such extreme, alarmist language. It is scary and was vaguely threatening. I have enjoyed listening to Coast Community Radio for the most part, so I can't understand why there would be this departure, what I consider to be KMUN's set of community values that supposedly represent the region. Surely, KMUN can't be in favor of such alarmist and extreme language. It was jolting and upsetting to hear such awful speech coming from your radio station. So that you'll know, I am not a practicing Christian. I am an Astoria resident and a gay man who is pretty liberal in political beliefs, who is also worried about what may occur under a Trump presidency. I did not vote for Trump, and I do strongly believe in the separation of church and state. But I don't understand why KMUN would allow valuable airtime to be used for extremist and mean-spirited political speeches. I suggest that you listen to McCusker's speech and judge for yourselves if this is the type of programming that should be accepted by KMUN. And the letter is signed, but I will remain it as anonymous. And I respond. My response to this letter should probably begin with my usual disclaimer that the following is my opinion, and perhaps my opinion only, in all the cosmos. After all, it is my opinion that is at the heart of this critical letter that suggests that my extreme beliefs do not belong on KMUN. I am not religious. I was born Catholic, but being left-handed damned me as a child of Satan, according to nuns and priests, which was a problem they attempted to cure by trying to force me to be on the right-hand side of God. They did not succeed, instead defining for me at a primary level the unremitting struggle between right and left, and corollary, good and evil. That experience inspired my interest in the Spanish Inquisition, which spread throughout Europe in various forms. Also the medieval burnings of witches that lasted six centuries, theoretically ending with the infamous Salem witch trials, though lynchings in the American South are comparable. The public pageants of holy fire at the stake quite often included gay people, from which came the term faggot, and assorted evil-minded heretics, in particular the Albigensians of southern France. And of course, there occurred the Crusades at the first millennium and afterward. I also studied Christian attitudes toward native peoples of the Americas by Protestant sects fleeing persecution from state-mandated religions in Europe, and the Spanish Catholic determination to gather souls and gold while obliterating and enslaving entire cultures. Our soon-to-be president seems determined to propound the myth that the United States is a Christian nation by denying admittance to Muslims and possibly oppressing those already living here. And as for Mexicans, well, they are Catholic rather than proper Christians, like Protestants or evangelicals. This is not sectarian prejudice. The histories of nearly every religion is bloody, either as fervent persecutors or purged pariahs, often as both. There is little separation between militant theocracies from dictatorial political creeds in their crude and cruel eagerness for worldly power and ecclesiastical supremacy. We seem to be in a global religious war, recreating for contemporary aspirations the same clash of dogmas as in antiquity. It would be a grotesque irony that humanity remains so mired in the irredeemable past that it self-destructs because of an unwillingness to resolve conflicts from its earliest history. In regard to the writer's expression of representing community, which community is meant? Even within this splinter of coastline, there are several communities of ideas and attitudes, although we are primarily white, as Oregon originally intended to be in its first state constitution. One community listens to Rush Limbaugh and Lars Larson, who are available on other local radio stations. This is the second time I have recently heard a complaint against a public radio station that it doesn't reflect its local community. The other, a station in Toledo, which that critic said should be allowed to die. Perhaps neither writer quite understands public media, which is intended to print or broadcast a wide variety of political, cultural, aesthetic, and even religious and irreligious views that commercial radio either ignores or exploits in its single-minded quest for profit, which Rush and Lars seem to fit into. Public media fills a void purposely disdained by commercial and corporate media. The anticipated dark era of intolerance, corruption, and domestic tyranny that we are about to enter will find public media an absolute necessity for the defense of democracy. So be prepared for a siege to eliminate public media. And perhaps neither writer is well versed on the meaning of democratic liberty. I tried to speak plainly to that point in the newspaper I used to publish. I asked the immortal question, what is freedom? The right to not be recognized by gender, race, religion, or class, but by the simple fact of a person's existence on the planet. The right to be counted on and respected for personal and independent expression of belief or opinion. The right to be the only person on the planet who believes in something no one else does. This has been Michael McCusker. Happy Martin Luther King's birthday.